This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
I'm Jim Russ. We're actually sort of in the virtual hallway, just outside the classroom there for a second.
I barely made it into the appropriate location here for the show.
Let's get right to it.
It was a huge, huge mailbag.
Terribly huge.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. We got an email from Lynn in Ohio. Dear Doc and Jim, is antivirus for my smartphone required? I have an Android, and my husband has an iPhone. Sometimes we go to sites that could be considered dangerous.
Uh-oh.
And, oh, and there's a little smiley face there. Lynn, what kind of sites are you looking at on your smartphone? That little smiley face, indicates...
It's in italics, which means it's extra smiley.
And so I really don't know whether you mean your husband goes to those smiley face websites or you do, but either one could be bad. She goes on to say, we have antivirus on our desktop, but do not have any protection on our cell phone. I love to listen to the show streamed live over the internet. Lynn in Ohio. Well, we got a live listener there, not a podcast listener. Well, the good news is the iPhone is really not too vulnerable to viruses yet. The hackers haven't gotten into it yet. The iPhone is a little operating system is a little bit harder to hack, so they've just decided to go after the easier targets, which of course would be the Android. So the Android actually is vulnerable. And if you're going to those smiley face websites, then I think you need to get an antivirus, certainly for the Android. They have a free version, AVG Antivirus, free. It's the free version. That's also a very good desktop, free desktop antivirus. So you can actually download that application, install it on your Android. Go to the store, download AVG Antivirus, free. Now, if you want, you can... You know, as always, it's freemium. You get the free version, but if you upgrade a little bit, they have additional features like, you know, protecting your cell phone in the event it's stolen, that, you know, you could lock it, you could wipe it, that sort of thing. So, but AVG Antivirus Free is good. And there are a lot of other ones out there that you can buy for like $9 or $10, but I'd recommend the free one. So that's a very good question, Lynn, and stay away from those smiley face websites.
I think they should have used more of the winky face than the smiley face,
I'm thinking. I don't know what Lynn's up there in Ohio. We got an email from Margaret. Dear Doc Schertz, it would be so great if you can help me and others navigate Google Groups. I'm looking for work as a business analyst in the D.C. Metro, and I did just a general search and landed on this attachment. It was exactly what I'm looking for, although the job announcement is almost closed. I want to join this group, but can't determine what group it is. If you can decipher and educate me on how to use Google Groups, I'd be most helpful. All the best, Margaret. Well, I took a look at the attachment. It actually was an attachment of one posting to a Google group that was talking about an open job for business analysts. So you can go to Google Groups. Just go to groups.google.com. That takes you to the main Google Groups site. Now, what's nice is once you get on the Google Groups homepage, you can do a search. And so you're interested in business analysts, just do a search on business analysts. And I, for instance, found that there was a business analyst group that might be worthwhile joining, for instance. Now, the particular page that you came up with was one listing. Now, if you look at the title of that listing, just above it in small print is the name of the group. Now, in your case, the name of this group was .less. And it was basically, you know, I mean, they're saying instead of .net, it's .less. It's kind of a game on not using .net.
Mm-hmm.
So you click on, and that's actually a link. So you simply click on .less, and that takes you to the main page for that group. And then there's a blue button that says join the group. So you could join the group. So that's really all there is to it. Google Groups are quite nice. Now, when you want to join a Google Group, you're going to have to, of course, log into Google Groups. And you just use your Gmail account. Just use your username and password. Log into Google Groups, and then you can join any group you want. Great question. And Google Groups are really trying to push that as they, you know, they go out with Google Plus, and Google's trying to really move into the social networking arena. We got an email from Lauren. Dr. Schertz, I'm grateful that you answered my question on 420. That would be last week. But what you told me actually didn't work.
Uh-oh.
This was where she had an extra blank page after posting in some graphics,
yeah.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, surrounding the graphics, you do have a formatting character, and sometimes you can make that smaller and smaller point. That particular trick works if the graphic fills the whole page and that formatting mark is then kicked to the next page. So actually, Margaret sent me her document, which had this mysterious blank page in it. And I couldn't see any formatting. I think there was some type of corruption that had been put in the file at the time she inserted the document. So what I did, I did a paragraph return on the previous page to give sort of a blank paragraph. I did a paragraph return on the following page to give a blank paragraph. And then I highlighted the bottom of the previous page and the top, and I dragged that highlight all the way down to the top of the next page, and I hit delete.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever was in there that I couldn't see because it was probably some kind of corruption or formatting that's not going to display, it just deleted it. So as soon as I did it, bingo, the page was fixed. Because she was a little bit desperate, I sent her back an email and told her how to do it. And she wrote back to me, and she wrote me an email. She says, Dr. Schertz, you're just wonderful. So it was another successful version, but it took two attempts to get the right answer for Lauren. We got an email from Led by Brain. Dear Dr. Schertz, last Saturday I bought an iMac for use at home. However, we use Microsoft Office at work, and sometimes I need to work in the evenings on Word or Excel. I was looking for an inexpensive way to access my Microsoft documents on my iMac. It seems like SkyDrive is my answer. It is appearing that I would have access to Word in the cloud using SkyDrive. Word that works on my iMac, that would be really good. And now, you know, but now I'm trying to figure out how I can import and open docs that I've sent to myself. So I've sent the docs to myself. How can I open them in SkyDrive, and how can I make this thing work? Hope you might help me with this. Your show is so helpful. And another smiley face. All the best. Led by Brain.
We are leading the league in smiley faces today.
We are certainly looking good on smiley faces today. But this is a different kind of smiley face.
It's
something completely different than what Lynn's smiley face was.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Well, this is the thing. You have an iMac. You could install a version of OpenOffice, which is free, of course, and it's open software. And so you could install that, and that will actually allow you to edit documents quite well, but it does not have all the features of Microsoft Word. Now, what we do at Stratford, we give many of our employees VPN access, and they log into their desktop at work. So they can see their desktop, and so they basically log into the desktop at work, and it's a thin client connection, and they can use then their Microsoft Office software that's installed on the computer at work, and so they can work on all their documents quite easily. Now, we have at Stratford, we use SharePoint, which is a where to share documents. So if you've got a group editing it, we can all share on it. I suspect that your company would have SharePoint, but then you have to have the rights to log into the SharePoint server from home and the rights to log into your desktop from home in order for this to work. Now, Microsoft does have SkyDrive, which is actually a cloud-based drive, just like Google Drive, and they'll give you 7 gigabytes of free storage. Now, what they're hoping is that you'll need more than 7 gigs of storage, and then you'll pay extra for additional storage. So, in fact, you could do SkyDrive, and you could store your document there. And if you want to use SkyDrive, when you install SkyDrive, you basically simply set up a subdirectory on your computer. You drag the document into that subdirectory, and it automatically synchronizes with SkyDrive. That's how it gets there, through synchronization. So you'll synchronize SkyDrive with the folder on your machine. You could have a SkyDrive, you could have another synchronization folder on your computer at work if they allow you to have that. And then once you copy a document into that sync folder, it'll automatically synchronize with SkyDrive. It's just like the iCloud with the iPhone. Now, SkyDrive does not give you Microsoft Office, though. It's just storage. Now, what Microsoft is doing in order to compete with Google Docs, they've created Microsoft Office 365. And it's basically a thin client, cloud-based version of Office, which you can get on a monthly subscription fee. And that's what you'd have to have. Now, if you just want to do it for like 30 days, you can get a trial version that will give you access for 30 days. If you want to get MS Office 365, the cloud-based MS Office, you'll need a subscription. It's about $60 a year. Or if you just want to do it monthly, it's $6 a month. And you just use it for as long as you want. You can test it out with the 30-day free deal. So that would be the way I would do it. Now, Microsoft put this MS Office 365 because they're trying to compete with Google Docs. Because it's clear that the trend is going more and more toward these cloud-based applications. I mean, at Stratford, we share all of our documents between campus deans, campus director using Google Docs. And actually, it's quite nice. You can actually see people updating the documents easily. So that actually works fairly well. So I think those are all of your options that you'd have. And I think it's just useful for your own sort of future employment to get used to using SkyDrive. I'd get used to SkyDrive. I'd do the synchronization. I'd log on to the I would get an account for MS Office 365, a free trial version, see how you like it. And maybe you could get your employer to spring for that, $60 a year or $6 a month. We got an email from Patricia. Dear Doc and Jim, I have a Bank of America banking app on my iPhone. Is it safe to use this application in an unsecured Wi-Fi hotspot like McDonald's or Starbucks? Thanks, Patricia. That's a very good question.
That is a very good question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you want to know whether your app is using HTTPS or not. In other words, is it an encrypted data stream? Now, you would think that banks would only use encrypted connections, but you're never really sure. You can't count on them doing it the correct way. Now, I did check on the Bank of America application, and this application delivers mobile banking that's fully encrypted, and they have added security. They have something called a site key on it as well as a safe pass. Now, the site key is displayed only when the Bank of America recognizes the device you're signing in from. So you go in, they do a challenge question, and then you can establish that device, and they put a cookie there so that they recognize that device as a legitimate device. Then what they do, they download what's called the site key, and these are really different pictures, the site key. And this gives you some assurance that you're logged on to a real Bank of America website. You know, sometimes these websites don't really give you that, and then you won't get the site key. And the other thing that the Bank of America application has, they have what they call SafePass. This is one additional level of security. And what that does, when you want to log on, it sends you by text message a one-time log-on key, which then you can log on. So this is a double measure. So actually, Bank of America has done quite a good job of security. Now, that being said, even though I use Bank of America app, I still do no banking at hotspots. I just don't like doing it.
No.
I also tend not to do banking when I'm traveling overseas. I just try not to use any of these sites that are highly sensitive any place except at home and locally.
Sure.
But that was a great question. We got an email from but one thing I will do, like if I'm at McDonald's and I've got to check my banking app, I'll turn off Wi-Fi, and then I'll go to the banking app using the cellular connection.
Sure.
And that's okay.
That's more secure that way.
It's much more secure. So I will use my banking over the cellular connection, just simply turning off Wi-Fi if I'm at McDonald's or Starbucks. We got an email from Alice. Dear Tech Talk, I periodically clean my hard drive using CC Cleaner. After running the program, my bank does not recognize me, and I have to go through, it's like apparently a bank logon, does not recognize me, and I have to go through this whole authentication process. They ask you a challenge question. Mm-hmm. Who is your dog? Who is your grandmother? Whatever challenge questions they have. Where did you grow up? How can I avoid? What kind of sites give me smiley faces? Whatever questions they want to, are they going to be asking you? Then how can I avoid this? Thanks, Alice. Well, many banks do have a good level of security, and they actually have two stages of verification. And on a computer, once it's recognized, what I just went through, they'll send a cookie down to your site, and that cookie is going to sit there. And when you log back on, it recognizes this as a computer that they've seen before, and they trust that computer, and they don't have that extra level of authentication. Now, when you're running CC Cleaner, one of the processes, it actually deletes all the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
So when you log back on, there's no cookie. The bank says, we've never seen this guy before. And you got to go through this whole rigmarole. So what you can do before you run CC Cleaner, it gives you a chance to specify exceptions. So just search your list of cookies for the Bank of America cookies and put them in the exception listing, and it will not delete the cookies next time you run it. It's relatively easy to do. Now, it may be kind of tricky to figure out what the cookie looks like. So what you could do would be to say, delete the cookies one time, go in and log into your Bank of America account, and then go in and look at the cookies, and there should only be one cookie there. It's the one you just created. And then that would be the cookie, and you can simply make that your exception. We got an email from June in Reston. Dear Tech Talk, I'm installing a surveillance camera in my basement, and I want the camera to send emails to my Gmail account. I have to provide the SMTP server, username, and password. What is all this? And I really don't know what I'm doing here. Love the show. June.
What's going on in her basement? That's my question.
That's right. Exactly. What are you doing in your basement that you need to send out pictures? You know, what is going on with the mailbag today? What is going on? I don't know. We've got some wild.
Everybody's a little frisky today.
They really are. Well, this is the deal. In order to send email through an email service, you have to use the Post Office Protocol, POP. Okay, incoming mail is forwarded through what they call the POP server. That's incoming email. And outgoing email is forwarded through the SMTP server. Now, that SMTP stands for Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. So you need the name of the SMTP server if you're going to do outgoing mail. And if authentication is using, you're going to need username and password. Now, the reason that they do normally require authentication for outgoing mail is they don't want spammers to use that outgoing mail server to send out a lot of spam. So they want to have the outgoing mail function password protected. Now, it turns out Gmail is just web-based email. There is no POP service, just with that web interface. But what Gmail has done, which is really nice, they allow you to implement a POP email or an IMAP email format. So what you want to do, you sign into Gmail, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's this little gear-like looking thing. Click on that gear thing, mm-hmm. and there's a drop-down menu. Go down to Settings, click on Settings, and you'll see an array of menus across the top once you get into the Settings page, and you'll see something called Forwarding and POP /IMAP. So you click on that, and there's a section there for POP, and you just say enable POP server. And once you enable the POP server, Gmail then gives you an incoming POP server, an outgoing SMTP server, and then you could actually set an email client up on your computer just like a regular POP account. Now, so once you've configured it, now you've got an SMTP server. You want to save this, and then you want to go in. Now, the address of the SMTP server that you've just set up is really not too complicated, smtp.gmail.com. And that server up, and then you also, I think you also had to specify the port here, June. You didn't tell me that, but I know you have to specify the port. And so you click and using SSL, secure socket layer, which I would recommend, which would be encrypted, you're going to want to put in port 465.
Ah.
If you want to use another type of encryption called transport layer security, which is a higher level encryption that Gmail offers, that's called TLS, it would be port 587. Now, if you're having trouble getting any of those ports working, you might try port 25 with SSL. That's kind of the standard port, and you may have firewall issues with these other ports. So that's really what you've got. Now, when you put in the username and password, use your username for Gmail, but put in your full Gmail account, username at gmail.com. Make certain you put the at gmail.com and then use your Gmail password. And that should be the only configuration that you need to use the outgoing mail server for Gmail. That was a good question. A lot of people are confused by this because they just don't understand all this server business.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's all the entire mailbag taken care of in great order.
Now, we have a little bit of extra time. I have a question. My iPhone is running really slowly, and I have a funny feeling. I don't have a whole lot of storage space left on this thing. I have about 500 photos on here.
Mm-hmm.
Should I delete some of the photos? Would you think that would make it?
Yeah, I would. That's what I would do. If you do run out of RAM, it's going to slow down.
I'm looking here for the how much space I have.
Because you've got the 16 gigabyte. You probably have the 8 gigabyte. What? How much?
It's capacity 6.3 gigabytes. Available 181 megabytes.
Oh yeah, you are one. Oh, you're down in the megabyte range.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just are about out of memory.
So I got to get rid of some stuff.
Yeah, I'd get rid of some. Now you can just transfer it to a desktop.
Just drag the pictures out, save them on a thumb drive or something like that.
Yeah, because if you hook your iPhone up to your laptop or to a computer, it's going to look like an external drive, and you can just copy all of the pictures. I'll copy all the pictures there, and that would be an easy way to do it.
That's not a bad idea. I was kind of like weeding some of the pictures out the other day, and I just
if you would use the iCloud and you would synchronize the pictures, they would automatically transfer to your.
I got to do that.
To your desktop.
That's really
and then,
what I
and
need
then
to
you
do.
Could then what you do is you anything in photo stream. So you take a picture. It doesn't go initially into PhotoStream. You then from the iPhone you move it to PhotoStream, and it automatically synchronizes through the iCloud. Then you go to any computer that you've got that iCloud synchronized account on, and there will be a PhotoStream folder there. If you want to keep that photo, then move it to another subdirectory. Because if you delete it on your iPhone, you delete it from PhotoStream, then it's gone from your. It's just a synchronization folder.
Gotcha.
So that would be the easiest way to do it, and then you can go through your desktop or your laptop and at will move the pictures out of the PhotoStream folder to the other folder, and then you can just delete what's in PhotoStream.
Makes sense.
So if you save it in PhotoStream, you'll actually save each picture twice. It goes into the picture folder, then the PhotoStream folder. So it shows up twice on your iPhone.
Now I noticed under the photo section, I got to bring this back here. The phone. You can set up albums, but what happens when you set up an album is the picture remains in the main portion of the camera directory. So you're actually saving that picture twice on the phone? Is that what you're doing?
See, I don't know if there's a pointer in there or not.
Uh-huh.
Now, if they've written the software well, there would just be a pointer. Like I set up three or four albums that I synchronized. So you could set up an album for different, like if you go on a different trip, a different vacation, so you could set up an album, you could synchronize it. Then you could share that album with other people with Gmail accounts. And so as soon as you take a picture and put it in that album, it shows up on everybody else's cell phone. I mean, if you've been on a trip and people say, give me that picture. So what I did, I created an album for the trip, And I made it, and I shared it just like PhotoStream. Because what Google does, you just don't have to share PhotoStream. You can create any folder, and you can share it. So then I created a separate folder, and then I would take a picture, and I would copy to that folder, which I shared with other people that were on the same trip. And as soon as I shared it with them, it said, somebody wants to share a folder. Do you accept? And they'd say yes. And so as soon as I copy the picture to that folder, it automatically shows up on their iPhone.
That's a pretty neat idea.
But then if I delete it from my folder, it's deleted from there because it's synchronized. So if they want to keep those pictures, they've got to move them to another folder.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great way to share stuff. And the iCloud is really convenient once you get used to it.
This is great information, and I got to do something because clearly, I mean, I've become
the
guy who hated all things Apple is now just completely
stuck. See, next I think you got a very low memory iPhone.
Probably so.
I think you got the guessing you got the cheapest one.
I'm sure I did because after trade-ins and discounts because it was time for an upgrade, I think I paid $38 for this.
$38. So I'm thinking you either got 8 gigs or 16 gigs.
Yeah, probably 8 I would think. Well,
okay.
Thank you for your information, Doc. Thank you for all of your emails. And we need more emails for next
That's
week, so
right.
And
we love your email. Send us your emails to techtalk@stratford.edu. And make sure to go to techtalkonline.com, sign up for the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and sign up for the podcast. We love you to listen over the airways. And always go to stratford.edu and check on their website.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Saturday morning means Tech Talk Radio at 9 every week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today on the hot seat is Drew Houston. Drew Houston is co-founder and CEO of Dropbox, a privately held internet company funded by venture capital, which provides cloud storage and synchronization services. You can also get free services of it, but they limit you to 2 megabytes of file storage, and then you can pay a little bit more. It's the freemium model.
Ah.
They start you out free, and then you pay for enhanced service. So they're using the freemium model. Houston was born in 1983 in Massachusetts. Drew graduated from Action Boxborough Regional High in Action, Massachusetts in 2001. I looked up Action Boxborough Regional High.
Mm-hmm.
Every year they've got about 20 merit scholars, and their SAT scores are through the roof. I don't know what it is about that Action, Massachusetts, but there are some bright, bright kids in that high school.
It's something in the water, I think.
That's right. He enrolled in the MIT computer science program in 2001. And when he was a junior, this would be about April of 2004, he started a company called Accolade, which was an online SAT prep company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people wanted to see, of course, when he was in college, in high school, he, you know, that Action Boxborough Regional High, they had very high SAT scores. So probably everybody was using SAT prep methods. So he set up an SAT prep company, and he was selling it to, you know, rising high school folks. And actually, he was making quite a bit of money on it. He called it Ramen Profitable, R-A-M-E-N, Profitable. This is actually, I had to look this up. This actually is a word that sort of evolved recently in the entrepreneurial space. Ramen Profitable means that it generates enough money to pay your living expenses. But it doesn't pay off enough to reward any investors. Okay, so it was Ramen Profitable. So he paid for his living expenses while he was in school.
Funny.
Now, his junior year, though, he got, you know, even though this was only Ramen Profitable, he took off a year. He said, you know, Mom, Dad, this MIT thing, you know, I got to work on this SAT prep company.
Right.
So he took off a year to work on this thing, and it was still Ramen Profitable. Now, he was making a little extra money, which made his mom happy. He played guitar in a band, the Angry Flannel Band. Now, I looked up their website. The front page of their website no longer works. So you go to the front page of the Angry Flannel website, you get this error code.
It's a great name.
So I go to the back pages. So I looked at all the back pages, and he basically played it mostly at school events. I saw his picture there. He played quite a mean guitar, apparently. Finally, in 2006, Houston received a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from MIT. I think his mom was really happy. You know, he decided this accolade, this Ramen Profitability was no way to go. And then in January 2006, he landed a job with Bit9. And his mom was even happier. He worked on Windows internals. These are like internal programs to Windows that would support various applications that Bit9 was fielding. And he worked there. His parents were really happy. He started in January 2006, but by May of 2007, he was fed up with it.
Uh-huh.
So he was there for 17 months.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know, Mom, Dad, I know I got this big loan here for MIT, but I got to quit.
Oh, boy.
I got to work on this new company, Dropbox. You know, his dad said, you know, Drew, is it going to be any better than Accolade?
And so, oh, boy.
You know, you can see how that goes. Now, this is what inspired Drew to develop Dropbox. As an MIT student, he was inspired to create it because he kept forgetting his USB drive at home. He'd work on this computer, then that computer. He was trying to carry his files all around. And he'd never have the right USB drive with him, and he tried to replicate files all over the place. He really started trying to do this file replication because his main hard drive at home crashed, and he had no backup.
Mm-hmm.
So then
because
he was only Ramen Profitable, and so then he had to go in and try to reconstruct files. He had to, you know, get them from other computers. It was a big drag. So he looked at some of the online storage services. He said, you know, I need to do some online storage to, you know, to solve my USB problem and disk failure problem. But he said all of these online storage solutions, there were several of them, had long internet latency, they had bugs in them, they're just too complicated to use. So he decided, you know, I just got a degree. I'm learning computer science. Why don't I write something for myself? So he began working on a little program that would allow him to upload files to the internet, and so that he would automatically be able to use those files. And his method was this. He'd create a folder on, say, computer A and copy all the files to it. And he would have a client then would take everything in that folder and then upload it to the internet and synchronize it. Then he might have another computer with also a shared folder on it, and it would be connected to the same internet storage area, and then it would synchronize there. So if he had changed a file on computer A, it would upload to the internet, and then it would. And if the other computer was on, it would download it to the other computer. And so all the folders were synchronized at all the time.
Wow.
So no matter where he would go, all of his files would be there. And so he started working on this thing, and He said, you know, probably this would solve a lot of problems that other people have. And he began to get the idea that maybe he could do something with this.
Okay.
Now, actually, you know, when he started writing Dropbox, he was still actually in school. And it wasn't until after he had worked 17 months that he decided to make it into a company. But he wrote his first lines of Dropbox while he was at a train station in Boston. That's where it got started. Finally, in 2007, after he quit his first real job, he co-founded Dropbox with a fellow MIT student, Arash Ferdowsi. Now, and the Dropbox that they had envisioned basically was the same method that he has. He shared folders, file synchronization. It also, they added revision history, so if you change a file, it would keep track of that so you wouldn't overwrite old files. So it was kind of nice. Once they got the initial, some of the initial software working, they got some seed money from a company called Y Incubator. Now, this Y Incubator is pretty interesting. What they do is that they've actually, in the last 5 years, they have funded around 105 startups. But they give them a very small amount of money, and then they give them a lot of help. And they have two intakes a year, and they work with them very intensely for 3 months. So they, and if they've got two people that have founded a thing, they typically only give you $17K. I mean, it's a small
not
potatoes.
A lot of money.
If they got three people in the company, they might give you $20K. And then they worked with them on it, and they developed it using under the Y Combinator tutelage, and with their big 17K cash flow, they actually built it up. And then in 2008, they made an official launch at the TechCrunch 50 annual conference. At that point, Dropbox was able to raise $7.25 million in Series A VC funding from Sequoia Capital and Accel Partners. So now they were in the bucks. But he talks a lot about the way he started. He says we were lean and mean. The way Y Combinator started them, instead of getting bloated up with fancy desks and overhiring, they just kept everything small. And he said that made it much, much more successful. Now, there was one small problem. The domain name Dropbox.com was taken. A cyber squatter had it.
Ah.
So they couldn't even use Dropbox.com. They had to use GetDropbox.com.
Right.
And then finally, in 2009, October, they acquired Dropbox.com from the domain squatter, probably using some of this $7 million in Series A VC money. They probably had enough money to buy the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
So they now became officially, in October 2009, Dropbox.com. Now, in 2009, they also hired Adam Gross. He was a former Salesforce veteran as senior vice president of marketing. Obviously, they were in the money now because they could start hiring senior people. By January 2010, Dropbox had more than 4 million users.
Hmm.
Now, that's not 4 million paying users because they're on the freemium model, but it's 4 million users. Now, Dropbox uses Amazon's S3 storage system. That's that elastic storage cloud that Amazon has. And so they don't really keep any hardware there. Now, Drew, when he has any free time, still likes to jam on his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he still thinks of those good old days when he was in angry flannel.
Yeah, I just Googled angry flannel to see his picture, and
you have to go to the back page.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to the back
page? Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah,
what did you think?
He's got the rock and roll kind of look thing going on there.
Now this guy is really—he just says what is on his mind. He's got a Twitter account. He's a Twitter at Drew Houston. He's got a Facebook account, facebook.com/Houston. He's on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Drew Houston. And his company website, of course, is now Dropbox.com.
There you go.
So this has still not gone public yet. Obviously, they're waiting to issue an IPO sometime. At some point, Drew is going to make a lot of money, and his parents will be very happy.
I made one other discovery here. I
What's
Googled
that?
The Acton-Boxborough School District. It's actually Acton without the I.
Oh, it's Acton.
Acton without the I. So it's not action. It's Acton Boxborough. It's two different communities.
Oh, Acton.
They have a combined
Oh, yeah.
Combined school district.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, this is the great thing about the web. We could go on here and figure out what the lunch menu is next week at the Acton-Boxborough School District.
Well, that's good.
Cared.
I'm glad. So it's in Acton,
Acton, Massachusetts.
I am glad that you are right on top of the misinformation that I'm spewing out.
Well, but you gather so much stuff that, you know, there's bound to be a little something here or there.
But see, if you dig down in there, they're very proud of their SAT scores and of the number of people that are merit scholars.
As well, they should be.
Yes, indeed. That's about all you'd ever want to know about Dropbox.com. I would suggest, actually, this is a great way to transfer files. Just go there, get up a free account, and try it out. I think I'm going to give it a try. I'm not using it now, but I kind of like the idea.
That is a good idea.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stick around. We'll be right back right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here. And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross, the adjunct professor for lowering academic standards at Stratford University. And we just talked about Drew Houston, who was the CEO and co-founder of Dropbox. While he was in high school, he played in a rock band. If you can tell us what rock band he played in, played mostly school events, you will win free tickets for two for fine dining at the Escafe at Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church or Cafe Karim at the campus in Woodbridge, Virginia. If you're calling from west of Boxborough, Massachusetts, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of the Rockies, it's 877-936-9333. Everyone else, 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
You know, I had some fun looking at this inflatable electric car.
That sounds really cool.
Now, at the high price of gas, you've really got a problem.
Okay.
Now, this electric car is going to sell for less than $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now it has a patented power mechanism called the X-Pack Multicore TM battery. And what it is, it's a swappable battery. And the battery will take the car about 300 miles. And the idea is you pull into... See, if you recharge a battery, it takes like a couple of hours.
Right.
But you take your battery pack, swap it out, and they plug in another battery pack, and so you can charge and go. So the idea is with this technology, you could drive across the country on an electric car. And when you fill up, you just swap the battery pack, just like filling up. It's actually a pretty clever
idea. So the spare battery pack stays in the car and charges while you drive?
No. Well, there are two ways. This car will carry 10 spare battery packs with it, so you could have a 3,000-mile range.
Really?
But what he's thinking in the long term, instead of gas stations, you'll have battery pack stations.
That's an interesting idea.
And so it'll be a standard battery pack, and then you just pull into the station. They pull out one battery pack and pop in another one, and they're all the same.
So it's sort of like going to get your propane tank filled.
The same deal.
So you never wind up with the same tank again. It's always these things floating around and recharging. And
It's just like the propane tank.
It's a cool idea.
That blue flame or something, propane tank switch off. So that is and so he's patented this idea. This is actually the first, I'm thinking electric cars may be practical. You got 300-mile range, swappable power packs. It's a pretty good idea. Now, in order to make this thing work, the car can't be very heavy. So what he's done, he actually has four models of cars that are all inflatable. And if you order the car, it comes in a box.
You have to blow it up yourself?
It said it would take two people about 2 hours to assemble the thing. You blow it up, and I guess you got to put the wheels on it.
That's a little scary when you think about it. John Q. Public is putting their own car together.
So, they said the dealer would probably blow it up for you. And this particular car then has a ballast in it.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise it would
float off.
It would blow off the road. So there's a ballast in it. So I guess the ballast might be filled with sand or water or something. I don't know. So there's a ballast in the thing, so it won't blow off. It also has some active stabilization. So when you drive the thing, at least the review said the thing's quite stable when you drive it down the road. Now, the thing is interesting. They started doing some crash tests. When people are injured in a car, they're usually injured by the crushing frame of their own car. So the metal of their own car is actually creating a lot of the physical damage.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a belief that this car may be an ultra-safe car, that even in a collision, you're not going to be hurt because you're going to be in this little kind of balloon thing. And some people have postulated that you could drive off a cliff and it would be like the Mars landing.
I won't be the genius that tries that, at least not intentionally. Now
you can go to their website, xpcarteam.com, xpcarteam.com.
It's a really neat idea. How many people will fit in this thing at a time?
This is a two-person car. It's a two-person car. Now, I put down here, I went back just further checking. They think they can sell it less than $10,000 is the final number.
Wow.
For this unit. But this is a great idea. xpcarteam.com. Now, by the way, this is a privately held venture,
mm-hmm.
and there's a spot on there. They're looking for investors.
Ah.
So
now, you said that the material that this vehicle is made from is something that came out of the NASA.
It came out of the NASA. That when the last landers landed on Mars, they were just put in big balloons and they just sort of dropped down and bounced around. So it was actually a way to cushion the fall.
Yes. There's no gravity on Mars, is there?
Well, it's light gravity.
Light gravity. There is gravity on Mars,
mm-hmm. and they did hit quite quite hard, and they were bouncing around. But these are also very small compartments. So if somebody would come up and say, put a knife in it,
mm-hmm.
it would only be one small compartment would be deflated. So you don't deflate the whole car.
Oh, that's a neat idea too.
Because instead of slashing your tires, they slash your car.
Slash your car.
This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio, IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I was looking at some theorem that Tom Rokicki proved this last week. He published it on his website. He showed that you can solve a Rubik's Cube, no matter what the initial position is, with 23 turns, with no more than 23
okay,
turns.
Okay, now did you actually do this?
I haven't done it, but he's actually proven that theoretically that's the maximum that would be. You can always do it if you do it the correct way, the most efficient way, with 23 turns. He proved a theorem that demonstrated you could do it in 25 turns a couple of years ago, and he's been working on it the last couple of years. He's got it down to 23 turns now in his theorem. It's quite a complicated.
He's getting paid to do this?
No, he's just doing it on his own.
Great.
No, his website, he didn't even register a domain name. He just has an IP address. I mean, it's like 63.197.151.31. I mean, he didn't even bother to make his homepage with a domain name. I guess he's just all numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's actually working on a theorem for 22 turns, and he thinks that he can probably get that soon enough.
Do you think he has a girlfriend?
I really don't know. Now, the thing is, to do this calculation, he had to use a lot of CPU time. Now, the CPU time was donated, I don't know whether they know it, by Sony Pictures ImageWorks. With the help of John Wellborn. He used the same machines that was used to produce the movies, such as Spider-Man 3 and Surf's Up. I don't know really how I got that
connection.
How much
of a donation that was.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if he's going to get John Wellborn in trouble there.
Yeah,
now,
for those watching on the Home and Garden Network, I'm doing air quotes right now as I say donate.
Okay. Now, Rubik cubes, R-U-B-I-K. You know what that is? It's that cube that you turn it.
Yeah,
and
it's got little different colored
it's
cubes.
It's got colors on each side, and it's actually a 3x3 cube on each side, and you can rotate each of the layers. You start out with all the colors. Each side has a different color, a uniform color, and then when you start turning it, you get the colors all mixed up. So the question is, how long will it take you to turn the cube and rotate in all the different directions to get all the colors properly aligned with a uniform color
back
to where it is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Rubik Cube now was invented by Erno Rubik.
Go figure.
Now, Erno Rubik was born in Budapest, Hungary during World War II. Now, Rubik studied sculpture in college, but after graduating, he went back to learn architecture at a small college called the Academy of Applied Arts and Designs. Now, Rubik's initial attraction in inventing the cube was not in producing really a game. It was like a structural problem. He wanted to figure out, how can I get something that will rotate in both directions and move the cubes around that won't fall apart?
Right.
So he initially tried it with rubber bands. Of course, that didn't work because you'd break the rubber bands. You kept turning it, and he finally figured out that if he would design the blocks so they'd hold themselves together by virtue of their shape. So he actually hand carved and assembled his first unit together. Each little cube he called a cubie. So he put his little cubies together, and he marked each side of the big cube with an adhesive paper with a different color, and he started twisting it, and then he realized that he couldn't get it back in the initial condition again. That's how he kind of invented the game that way. He said, how can I get it? And so it took him about a month to finally figure out how to get the things realigned again. I guess he's not really a world champion Rubik's Cube player. But he actually patented the thing. So he invented the game in the spring of 1974. He applied for a Hungarian patent in January 1975. And then he left his invention with a small toy manufacturing cooperative in Budapest. Now, the patent approval came in early 1977. The first cubes appeared on the marketplace in 77. Ideal Toy eventually bought rights to the Rubik's Cube. So there you go. I used to play around with Rubik's Cube a lot, but I haven't done it for a long time.
And it used to frustrate me to no end. I've never been able to get one back to there.
By the way, Jim, just to answer your question, he does have a girlfriend or a wife. I'm not sure what it is, she is, but on his webpage. They have plenty of pictures. And also, he's a marathon. He's a marathon runner.
Really? Oh, who's this Tom Rokicki?
Tom Rokicki, yes.
Yeah, the guy, he's a marathon runner.
Yep.
Okay.
I would think a man sitting around playing with his cue ball day wouldn't have a girlfriend. Did I mean that? No,
I don't think so.
By the way, I was having a discussion with Doc about this. Apparently, they still manufacture and sell these Rubik's Cubes. On their average going price is anywhere from $8 to $10. So there you go.
Yeah.
There's also, if you go to Rubik's.com, they actually have the Rubik's Cube Championship. The 2008 Rubik's Cube Championship is going to be held in Europe. It's going to be in Dario, Spain.
I wonder what the shortest number of moves is, you know, to get it squared away, so to speak.
I would say 23.
You think that's it? Yeah.
23, 22.
Or fewer. Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
he's done it in 23. Mm-hmm. I wonder if anyone's done it in less than that.
Well, you see, his theorem is only that he's proven that you can always do it with at least that. It doesn't prove you can do it with less than that.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to know.
I think theoreticians have sort of said it's going to be more than 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, how close to 20?
20 can
so
you
he's
get.
Kind of working down. Now he's down to 22. So it's going to be more than 20 and less than 23.
Less than 23.
So we know it's going to be 20, 21. Yeah. 20, 21, or 22 is going to be the optimum.
You know, I've got to cut the grass and trim trees. I don't really have time for the Rubik's Cube.
But you see, the reason that it could be even less than that, Jim, is that if you don't, it depends on the initial condition.
Of course.
You could have it not far from, not very much out of disorder. You could do it in like 3 moves.
It's kind of like not shuffling the deck of cards really well.
Right. So so it could always be a few, but if it's totally randomized, you always can do it in no more than 23. That's what his theorem proved. We actually have a compression wave gun that produces air balls.
Yeah, everybody.
You know, you walked into the studio, and I see you in the bullpen with this thing, and I'm thinking, did he finally go off the edge? Is he going to climb the Texas Tower? Looking at this thing,
it looks like the Tower of Babel.
It's got a viewfinder on it.
Yeah.
It's got. I don't know. So,
this thing is a it's a large cylinder, and the output's about maybe a foot and a half wide. And I pull back this diaphragm.
Uh-huh.
It's spring loaded. Then I let this diaphragm go.
Okay, let's see what happens.
I'm going to shoot an air ball over at Jim. Oh! Boom!
Ouch!
I'm going to shoot an air ball over at David. What this thing does, it shoots. It's a compression thing. I got this Mega Zooka.
You just broke my microphone.
I got this from Edmund Scientific. From
uh-oh.
Scientific oh. Online.
Jeez,
for 24 round 5.
Go ahead.
Scientific is still around.
It has now fallen into the hands of a known felon.
Yeah. See, you can.
Andrew Mitchell's going to go try
Andrew's
to rob a bank
with
that.
You can pull it back. You can shoot it there.
Okay.
Yeah, now Andrew's in here.
Jeez. Shot my headphones off.
Now, see, what better place than in a radio station, which is renowned for hot air? Now we've got a mega hot air ball.
Exactly.
Bazooka. Somebody has any hot air.
All right.
Mega hot air balls.
All right.
Now, the thing is...
The mic got most of it, I think.
I think it did.
Yeah.
What this thing actually does, if you've ever seen somebody blowing smoke rings, this blows out, this
nice.
Sends out a compression ring, and it's actually a compression wave. All week, I've been shooting this thing all over the house. our poor plants.
I've been
shooting this thing.
You know, this I can see for hot days. You need to have the machine gun attachment for this thing.
It just comes out.
Boy,
so this
I'm
thing,
getting rid of a
I'm
lot
telling you,
of aggression here this morning.
I tell you, this is a great toy for kids because they're just shooting air. Go to Edmund Scientific. That would be scientificsonline.com and get your own Megazooka.
What happens in close range with this thing? Let's try it.
Okay. Oh, that's dangerous.
I better put down the Megazooka.
I know. Now,
without an eye or something.
We had a blast this week. We will see you next Saturday here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio.
Music. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions.